When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the 1871 podcast. And I'm delighted to say our special guest for this episode is former Reading FC technical director, Brian Teverden. So welcome to the show, Brian. Thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
And before we speak to Brian, we've got a little bit of good news to bring you about the 1871 podcast, because Johnny has checked where we are on the Apple Football podcast chart. And I'm very pleased to say that the 1871 podcast has moved up from outside the top 100 up to 70th place on the Apple Football podcast chart. So that's good news for us. So thanks for giving me the heads up on that one, Johnny. Happy to get that news. We're one place behind the Brian McClair podcast, so I don't know if it's good or bad.
Well done. Let's well done.
Thank you. Thank you, Brian. So before we speak to Brian, here's a quick heads up for you for what's coming up this week on the 1871 podcast. So tomorrow we're concluding our Reading FC Top 100 series by looking at our top five influential people in Reading's history. And then on Wednesday, our special guest is Andy Bernal. And then on Thursday evening, our guest is Reading women's defender Lily Woodham. And then on Friday evening, our guest is Linvoy Primus. So that's all coming up this week. And all of those episodes are available anytime from 6 p.m. onwards. And then as soon as Reading announce their next manager, we'll be bringing you a special episode with our reaction to the appointment. So there's a few names in the hat. Johnny and I have discussed that already. You, the fans, have got your own ideas. We know that. But for now, let's speak with the former Reading FC technical director, Brian Teverden. So just by way of a brief reminder and a brief introduction to you, Brian, you're a former player, of course. You worked as a coach at Ajax before joining Reading in February 2016. And you were actually initially appointed as head of international football and development. And then you took over as technical director a couple of months later after Nick Hammond left. Then in September 2018, you left to become chief executive at Belgian club. And forgive my pronunciation, KSV Roeselare. Is that correct?
Correct.
Okay. Oh, well, good guess.
well done.
Yeah, and you've been working with the Suriname FA for some time, and you've recently been appointed general manager of the Suriname FA. But I want to start by taking you back to your time at Reading. And can you start by telling us how the role at Reading came about initially?
As you said before, I came in as the head of international football and development, very close with Nicky Hammond at that period. So everything was internationally with scouting, recruitment development, playing style, etc. That was on in my pocket. And then I think after a month, Nicky Hammond left to West Brom, and then the board came to myself and asked me if I want to do the job. I said yes, but under the guidance of Nigel Howe. I think the first 4 months was as an interim. And I think after 2 months, they came already, Brian, you want to do it permanently. And I said, let me finish the window first. And then after that, I took over the job. And to be totally honest, it was a fantastic time. It was difficult, but we had a good period at the club.
Yeah, and during that time at the club, though, you know, that it was during a period of some changes with owners and that sort of thing. When you look back, Brian, at your time at Reading, how do you reflect on that? What do you feel like you achieved? What are you most proud of during your time at Reading?
Me, it was not personally, but for me, what I'm really proud of course, you know, with limited budget, you came to Wembley in a playoff final, of course. But for me, the most important thing was that we had good connection with the fans, because there was no communication to the fans. Everything was within a gray area, and I tried to do my best to give so much information to the fans. There was a good cohesion within the club, because we had fantastic people in the club. And we were like a family. And if you have that feeling and that vibe around the club, then you can achieve more. And that was for me the most important thing. And in the end, you know, you see where we went in the playoff final. And yeah, after that, change will come. And then the whole vibe was really negative within the club.
Yeah. Really negative. And Johnny, I want to bring you in now. I've still got plenty of questions that I'd like to ask Brian, but over to you.
Yeah, Brian, I think one of the things for a Reading fan, which took us by surprise, a lot has happened since it's taken by surprise, but when Jaap Stam came in as manager, can you talk us through that process and how Jaap became involved? Because I don't think many Reading fans would have picked him.
No, so I think Nicky left in mid-season. Left already from the club. So from there, I took over already. So I finished the season with Brian McDermott. He was a fantastic manager, fantastic person. And we worked very close in the beginning. And then in the end of the season, the owner just made the decision to go from new strategy. So for myself, it was really tough because I had a close relationship with Brian McDermott. And to sack him at the end of the season was my first thing, and it was really, really tough.
Yeah.
As a young lad coming in, you have a good relationship with the manager, and then to tell him, you know, the owners want to make a change. So that was my first task. And then the process started. So I had a long-term strategy, what I wanted to do, what kind of managers and profile. So I had, I think, a list of 10 persons, and then you make it smaller, smaller, smaller. You go down to three managers, and then one of them was... Erik ten Hag, and we had he's now at Man United and he's doing a good job. We had a good conversation, how we wanted to do, how we wanted to play, how we want to run the club. But in the end, I didn't have the money because he had in his contract, I think it was 300k euro, but there was no budget, so I couldn't bring him in. And then I came about with Jaap, and I gave him a call, and then the day after he came to London, I had a chat with him. Brought him to the Thai owner's house, and I think within 3 or 4 days, the deal was done. But the funny thing was when I went to the boardroom, I say I think I'll proceed with Jaap Stam. Everybody was laughing, and I say Jaap Stam never gonna come to Reading. And I said okay, and I walked the boardroom out, and within 10 minutes, I had him on the phone, and the rest is history.
What was he like to work with from your side?
No, he was all right. Of course, he was also. And new in a job as a manager, but we worked very closely together. There was a lot of communication. No, I can't say it was not difficult. It was good for the lads, of course. You know, it was a good history as a player. And he communicated very good with the boys. The door was always open, so that communication and the work ethic was good. Was good.
And you had some of the signings there, which kind of a different approach again. I think Roy Behrens came in, Danny Vandenberg. How when you were going for possible signings, how was that approach? Do you go, oh, we need a type of player? Are we looking in a different area where it's not been recruited?
No, what you do, of course, you have a playing style. In every position, you have a profile. What kind of player you want to... I want to have on that position from your strategy, and of course you have a list with a lot of players and you narrow it down. And, of course, Roy Brins, I know him very well, but Jaap knows him really well.
Yeah.
And he came to me, Brian, can you take a look at Brins? So I took my recruitment team to put a lot of analysis on him, and he was in that period was a little bit tough because he had a difficult time at Germany in that period. So thank you. And the same was with the other players as well. And I remember there was a lot of critic on Sandro Wieser, was it? Wieser? I don't know if you guys remember him.
Andre Wieser. Yeah.
Sandro Wieser. I think so. He was in midfield. He didn't play a lot, but with him was, well, you know, we got him and they asked me, okay, Brian, can you bring him in? And it was a little bit of a 50-50 situation, but financially it was really, really, really nothing. So it was a little bit of a risk with nothing because financially wise, we didn't have to pay any fee on him and his wages was like a second team player. So it was not the risk. Of course, you take a couple of risks with minimum big risk. But on every player, it was through a commission, myself, the owner, Nigel Howe, and your recruitment team, of course, and the manager. So it was never a decision by myself.
And how long does that process take? You know, when you identify a player to getting them into the team, how long was that for you? Kind of some kind of.
Of course, for example, for like Roy Bees, you know him as a player. So, but then you go down and you want to see what his playing minutes are. You know, for the last 2-3 years, injury history. You're gonna now pull everything out of him to see if he's okay. But the whole process take, I think, maybe 6-7 months.
Okay.
Yeah. So there's not an thing I say, okay, we're going to take him and we're going to pick him. No, this is really a research. That's why the recruitment team is so important.
And Brian, it certainly felt, you know, from a Reading fan perspective that there was some progress being made. Obviously, the club had success previously, but it felt like with Nigel Howe there, with you there, it felt like quite a kind of promising time. Certainly from the Reading fans' perspective. Then, of course, Nigel left. And my next question...
Biggest mistake. Nigel was there for years, so he knows the club from top to down and everything within the club. And to be fair to him, I worked with him very closely and he supported me massively. And if I have to put it next to one... Rongoli, that was a really disaster for the club. And I'm a professional. I don't want to talk a lot about him. But I think it was a massive mistake to get Nigel out of the club. But to be really honest, you could see it already when he left and Ron came in. You see people left the club from down. Even Lee Heron was really important for myself also in the academy because I promoted him as an academy manager. And I think the difference between me is when I came in the club, I worked with people within the club and developed people within the club. Because why should I bring people from outside if they don't know the club? These people have known the club for years. So give them the opportunity to step up. And that's what I did with a lot of staff members in the academy. That was the difference between me and Ron. Ron came in and kicked everybody out and make things difficult. And I think that was a big mistake when they brought Nigel out.
What were some of your kind of main frustrations? You've mentioned a couple of them there, but what was your biggest frustration during Ron Gourlay's?
The biggest frustration was when I worked with Nigel, I had everyday contact with Nigel, but he knew my plan, my long-term plan, and he supported me in my plan. And he was not always agreeing with myself, but that's normal in business, I think. As long as you can explain what you want to do, et cetera, et cetera. And with Rongoli, the difference with him was he wanted to sit on my chair. And that was the thing, was the difference. And he made the calls on, for example, renewing contracts for players. And then after a year, cancel the contracts. It's massive financially. That's unbelievable. And the other thing is, well, you know, he brought players in on big wages. And it was not my idea. And I was not happy with it. And, I can go on and on and on, but
yeah,
that was the biggest frustration for myself.
Because from what I've read, you know, I've not spoken to you previously, but from what I've read, Ron Gourlay was kind of a key reason why you decided to leave. Would you have stayed at Reading, do you think, if he wasn't CEO, or certainly if Nigel Howe, could you have seen...
100%. 100%. Yeah. And even my wife, you know, she was really happy with Reading. And my youngest, you know, was born in Reading. So, yeah, we were all into the club, with the people in the club. And no, 100%. If it was another CEO, I would stay in the club for sure.
Yeah. I got one final question about when you left Reading, then I'm going to hand back to Johnny. But obviously you left, and then 2 months later, Ron Gourlay leaves. What's going through your mind at that point?
Stupid, I had to stay for two more months. Nah, I was, you know, you never can predict that after 2 months you will left, you know, you leave the club. So, of course, in your back of your head, you was like, maybe I had to fight more, but I fought already for the whole season. You know, and I'm not a person who's going to sit on a chair and open his hand every month and take my wages. This is not me. I want to work. And but yeah, it was a little bit sad to see when he left. Like I had to stay for 2 more months. But it is what it is. I left, and but I think I was not important. But it was more important for the club that the person was out of the club, because it was unbelievable.
Johnny, over to you again.
Yeah, Brian, I think your opinion of Ron's is shared by most Reading fans, to be honest, because as you've probably seen over the last few years, the decline of the club. Have you been following what's been going on since you left and how things have gone down?
I said it as well, you know, once a blue, always a blue. But for me, even my wife is following the club. Sometimes he came, you know, they're lost again, and you're going to follow them on social media or whatever. And of course, he's speaking to people within the club. It's sad to see that Reading is a beautiful club with good people. They had good people in the club, and they still have good people in the club from the old regime. But it is sad to see that the club with so much potential went down to League One. It is, for me, still unbelievable. And the amount that we spend financially is ridiculous. It's impossible that we are now in League One. So painful.
It is. Like, for you, like, if you... We're coming back in now. Maybe you will wonder, hopefully. Looking at the club now, what do you see as a rebuild with what we've got, where we need to go, as, you know, within your role when you came in at a different time? But how would you go through that process of restructure?
One thing with Reading, and God bless his soul, was Eamon Dolan, and it was the academy.
Yeah.
And that was my philosophy as well. Because I came from the Ajax Academy, and that was my first thing when I came in, and together with Nicky Hammond, I was looked straight in the Academy, and because we had so much good players within the Academy, and still they have good players in the Academy. And for me, it was really sad when I saw that both this player and that player, that player. I was like, you know, we put so much, and not, again, not myself, but Eamon Dolan put so much blood, sweat, and tears in this Academy, and then you see players coming with big wages, and et cetera, et cetera. So, the rebuild with this club now and strategy is build the academy again and give young players, because that is your future, and then you can make money on the players to get financially income again and revenues. But the academy is the first thing you need to grade up and give the chance to the academy players to develop them.
And how good
is what I believe.
How good was Eamon to work with?
I didn't work very close to him because he was that period really sick. I spoke to him a couple of times to show him respect. And he was really happy with that. But from what I hear, what people told me, you know, there's so many people speak so highly about him that he can't be bad, to be totally honest.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
And I spoke a couple of times with him and to show him respect. And the man had left a legacy behind. So you need to build on that again.
Yeah. Hopefully. It's been a tough time, isn't it?
It is. And that's why I say, you know, people think always, you know, with money you can do everything. But it's not only about the money. It's, you need to have a strategy, but also the people within the club. You know, you had so much good people within the club. And that's why I was so, excuse my language, but so pissed when I saw that they shift a lot of people out.
Yeah.
The people know the club better than myself, better than other people who came in the club. So it's painful to see.
Brian, what do you think for you has been the key thing that's been missing for Reading over the last few years? Because they have struggled. Okay, when Paunovic came in, it was a good start to the season. but it's fair to say over the last few years, well, since you left, basically, Reading have struggled. What do you think has been the key thing that's been missing for the club over the last few years?
Strategy as one, stability. I like the phrase always, you know, that was like the Reading way. And that's not only in playing style, but also, and I say it again, people within the club, you know, who has connections with the town, but also with the fans. There was no connection, totally no connection. And if you change manager every year, what kind of stability you create for the club? Nothing. So over the last years, it was every year there was another manager. Every year, tons of players coming in. No good.
Reading have got a director of football, head of recruitment now in place, Brian Carey. What do you think is the most important thing now for Reading to do over the summer? And also, obviously, you know, what all the fans want to know about is the manager. What type of manager do you think Reading need following relegation to League One?
You know what? For me, it's not difficult because I don't know what the strategy is within the club. So it is for me difficult to tell them you need to do this and that. But of course, everybody knows how League One is. I think it is a tough league as well, with also big clubs in. They will ask different things in League One than in the Championship because it is more physically, I think. So you need to have a strategy in recruitment-wise to get as soon as possible out of League One to go back to the Championship. So, but for me now to tell them what kind of manager, et cetera, is difficult because I don't know what the strategy is.
Yeah. Johnny, I'll let you come back in now.
Yeah, and Brian, you're saying when you came in, the names, it's not mine, but the owners at Reading at the time when you were there, how much involvement do they have in the club? Because with the big criticism now is that the owners aren't speaking. And, you know, we've had this big relegation, the points deductions, and now there's been pretty much silence since the relegation. How was it for you when you worked with the owners at your time?
With the Thai owners or the Chinese owners?
Both. Do you work with both?
No, we're very close with the Thai owners and really close. And I worked really close with Tiger. He was really involved. He wanted to know everything in a good way. He was not involved in a negative way. You have to do this, this, this. As long as you can explain why you want to do it. Really good to work with, to be honest. And when the Chinese owners came in as well, I worked very close to them. But you know what? I don't think it is the owners' fault. There are people around the club with no good intentions. And it's a little bit sad to hear and to see that good people... they get misinformed or people try to be around them with different intentions. No good intentions to help the club, but intentions to fill their pockets.
Yeah. Do you think it's a problem like with football now, with owners being overseas and not being around the day to start off? He was there around the club. You could see it. But when you're relying on, like you say, voices in the club to tell you, what's going on?
Yeah, no, massively. And that's what I say, because believe me, the Chinese owners are really, really good people.
Yeah,
really good people. But if you have people around them and surrounding the club and doing bad things and bad intentions with the club, this is what happened. The club is going down, and it's a little bit sad because I work very close with the owners, and I have no bad word on the owners, the Chinese owners, not, but also the Thai owners. Not. But if you have bad people around them and surrounding them, yeah, see what happened.
What do you think the Thai owners left? And we've had four or five different owners now. Why do you think people move on? It's just people go, oh, it's not worked. We wanted to gamble to get to the Premier League. Now we're kind of bored, move on to something else. What do you think that keeps happening with Reading, owners changing so much?
Yeah, that's why it's so important that you have an owner who has, that they support the footballing side, and and of course you need to think business side on the business side as well, because you need to create income and et cetera. But what you see with a lot of owners, they try to flip the club, coming in, try to make money or whatever, and then flip the club to somebody else as well. And that's why it is so important when an owner come in, that he is supporting the footballing side as well, and not only the business side. And that's what you see a lot with a lot of clubs. And it's happened with Reading as well. I think we have, over the last couple of years, so many owners. It doesn't make any sense.
Brian, and Brian, there's apparently, you know, measures in place to make sure, you know, the fit and proper owners test. I don't know what the actual name of it is, but do you think that's working, or do you think it needs changing?
Yeah, I think it is in a 50-50 one. Of course, it is always good that the wealthy people come in the club and try to support the club. But I think they need to have proper due diligence on okay, what are the parts, what's happening already, and why they want to come in the club. Because what I just explained, you know, some people come in the club and I think only on the business side, but the footballer side is, of course, is the most important thing. Because if you do well, the business side is going to work as well. And I think some people turn it around, think on the business side, but don't want to invest in the footballing side. So, to be honest, I don't know from the FA how that process is working. So it's difficult for me to say, but it's my philosophy and how I think.
Sure.
How it should work.
And just looking back at Yapstam's time at the club, obviously it went well to start with. Why do you think it didn't sort of push on from there? What went wrong, if you like?
I think from the start, what I explained before, the whole cohesion within the club was gone. The whole vibe after the playoff final. Nigel left. For me, was that a big blow? I'm a loyal person because I couldn't make another step to another championship club as well, to two championship clubs as well. And but the biggest issue was we had a leader in the club who had different intentions, and didn't work out. And from if it don't work out in the top, it always coming down.
Yeah.
The top is sealed and relaxed and there's a clear strategy, then down will be relaxed as well. But if everything is open and it was all over the place, it will come down as well. Because I've never seen a CEO who's coming in a dressing room or is coming at the training ground within where the players are eating and try to do the things on his own. It was chaos.
Yeah.
And that's from the start. Works as well. Not good.
And Johnny, I'll bring you in again in a second, but Brian, just want to kind of ask you, because you've said that, you know, Reading's kind of still in your heart, you've still got a fondness towards the club and you're looking out for them. Where did that come from? Was it all about the people that you work with? Was it to do with other things as well?
Well, the funny one was, I when the Thai owners brought me in, the people didn't trust me in the beginning, you know? That's the funny one. Who is this Dutch guy, young boy, coming in? But then they saw the way how I wanted to work and build a relationship with them. And then they see this boy is not a person who come with bad attention. And then you see that the people, how can I say that in good English? They bring me close to the heart. And I brought me at my home. They brought me their family. We had dinners together. And then you're in the circle, you know, and I see how good the people are within the club. And that's what's for me really important. Okay. That's why I'm always have the club in my heart. And also the fans, to be honest. And there were some fans who were really critic, and I went in a dialogue with them. And some were really, why do this? And when I spoke to them and I explained it, I'm like, okay, makes sense. And that's what I like. You know, a lot of people are afraid to have a dialogue with fans or whatever. I didn't have any bad attention, so I explained them, this is happening, or there's no financial, there's no money within the club, so we have to do this, and et cetera, et cetera. And as long as you can explain the fans, they are not bad. But if you do silence, they're going to make their own story because they have their own thinking. But as long as you explain them, they're all good because they pay money within the club, so you need to explain them.
Yeah. Johnny?
Yeah, I was saying two things. As a fan, and what was it like for you with being at the playoff final, the famous penalty loss, another one to our history?
So I had an interview, I think it was 2 months ago, and I saw the game back after all these years. I never, never, ever looked it back, because for me it was a massive blow. It was a little bit of a fairy tale, like, you know, you came in with no financial support. I think in December we had a small injection to brought, I think we brought 5-6 players in. And we were even in the playoff final, and you had to score the penalty, and we were done, and we missed the penalty. So it was unbelievable. But 2 months, I think 2-3 months ago, I saw the game back for after all these years. Still painful to watch.
It is, still, isn't it?
Yeah. Still painful.
And then the following start of the following season, if my memory says right, we got Sonny Aluko, didn't we, for a large fee for a club like Reading. And that kind of seemed to be was the start of the troubles. I don't know what the number was, but it seemed to be that it was a lot.
7.5 million.
Yeah. I mean, that's huge, isn't it, for a club like Reading in the Championship at that time?
Yeah. The only thing what I can say, I wasn't happy with it. So let's be very clear on that.
Yeah.
On the fee, because it was massive. So one player, I had other ideas, but again, this is what I explained before. It was another leader who wanted to show off and did the deal.
Then, like, how frustrating must that be for you trying to do what you're doing?
Massive, because the reason why I tried to get everybody together. You know, I had unhappy people in the academy, and I try to make everybody happy. But if somebody else is going his own way, what do I need to explain to my people downstairs?
Yeah.
You know, like, bloody hell, this, we're paying 7.5 million on a player, but we need money in the academy. You know, so it was really, really, really frustrating. And that's why, and I get a lot of stick from players who are sending me messages, of fans sending me messages on social media within my inbox, and what is this, 7.5, blah, blah, blah. And the frustrating thing was, you couldn't reply to them because it wasn't me, you know. But I get it. You know, it was crazy. But to be fair to the boy, Sonny was a very good boy, and he had a fantastic season the season before. So I didn't have any problem with the boy. I was happy when he came in, but I was not happy with the fee what we paid for it.
Yeah,
no chance.
And like now, Ron Gorley's at West Brom. Like, how does that happen that somebody gets a job after what's gone on? It's been kind of out in the public, isn't it?
Yeah. That's a funny one, because people send me a lot of messages. Also, fans from Reading sent me messages like, your mate is at West Brom and you need to be professional. So I didn't reply on that, but yeah. Yeah, it is what it is. I saw Swifties there as well. So it's a funny one. Yeah.
Brian, just talk about your current role. So, you've, as I say, you've been with the Suriname FA for a while, and you've recently taken on the role as general manager. What are your ambitions in that role and in the future as well?
So, give you a little bit of background. Suriname is a small country in South America where I came from. A lot of Dutch people are from Suriname. So what happened, I think, 4 years ago, you can have a double passport. So the FIFA changed the rule a little bit. So a lot of players from Holland who didn't play for the national team from Holland can now play for Suriname as well. So we started it. They were, I think, two years ago, they were in the Gold Cup. It's a little bit equivalent like the European champion in Europe. And now we are trying to qualify again for the Gold Cup again. But I started 1.5 years ago and brought in a big manager in, and was Stanley Menso, who is now back to China with Beijing Guoan. He was a legend of the country. And now I brought another legend in, Aaron Winter, together with Henk ten Cate. And I think now the big goal is to get to 2026 World Cup. And the reason why is because America, Canada, and Mexico are the host. So there are three extra spots free now in the CONCACAF. And they're going up from 32 to 48, I think, in the World Cup. So the chances are is realistic. So that's why the president within the country, with the Football Federation, and they all said, you know, we have to go through it. So there's now a development for, 3 years now. To convince players from Holland to play now for Suriname, which is happening at the moment now. So there's a big thing, exciting. And that's why I'm here at the moment now to organize everything. But my biggest goal is to get to the to 2026 with Suriname.
Yeah, Johnny, over to you now. Have you got a final couple of questions for Brian?
Yeah, Brian, well, it's just lovely to hear speaking to you. Would you ever come back to Reading or come back to England in a role at some stage in the future? Is that something you'd revisit?
Yeah, for sure. I believe it or not, but last week I had a goal from a club in the Championship. Well, I couldn't because I said I just get my word over here. So I was surprised on that one, but they were really like, okay, let's have a word. And I said, I'm really loyal. But to go back to your question, if you ask my wife, in a blow, she's there. She's back in Reading. So yeah, listen, this is my club, and for sure in the future, if the possibility is there, I think there are good people now. Hopefully, within the, on the spot. So in the future, if the possibility is there. Oh, yeah, for sure.
Brilliant. And what was your highlight of your time at Reading for you personally?
Personally, of course. What I like is that you brought some academy players from the academy towards the first team. That's for me an happening. Of course, you know, the playoff final. Of course, when you sign Yab, when you convince Yab some to bring in. But it's funny or not, the biggest thing is when I saw that the whole club was one in the club, but also outside the club. Everybody was proud of Reading and happy about Reading. And that was my biggest achievement, I think.
All right, Johnny, just to mention, and unless I'm mistaken, I think we might have had an exclusive on this episode that Erik ten Hag nearly signed for Reading a while back. But I don't know.
Whatever happened to him?
Yeah, I don't know. Did he go on to do anything after that? But
I don't know, to be honest. I don't know.
Yeah. But Brian, absolutely fantastic to have you on. Really appreciate your time and wish you well with everything you're doing with Suriname, and hopefully see you at the World Cup.
Hopefully.
And thanks ever so much for joining us. And just a reminder, here's what's coming up on the 1871 podcast this week. So tomorrow, Johnny and I are talking about influential people in Reading's history. Then on Wednesday, we've got former Reading defender Andy Bernal as our guest. Thursday, Reading women's defender Lily Woodham is our guest. And then Friday, Linvoy Primus is our guest. And they're all available anytime from 6 p.m. So all that leaves me to say is thank you to Johnny and thank you to our very special guest. It's been an absolute pleasure. Brian, thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Sports Social Podcast Network.